Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
Brought to you by Active Iron
on News Talk.
That time of the week where we put your questions to our doctor in Ask the GP. And today I'm chatting with Dr. Niall Breen from the Portmarnock GP Clinic. Niall, good afternoon.
Hi, Andrea. How are things?
Not bad. Loads of listener questions in so far. Actually, the number is 087 1400 106 if you have a question for Niall today. This listener, Niall, had vascular surgery in January. They've had hard vein now inside their leg over their knee. They're wondering, should they get it checked?
I probably wouldn't be in a mad rush to get it checked. Okay, it depends what kind of vascular surgery they had. If it was veins or something, might be that there's kind of something there that has got a little bit inflamed again. It would really depend on the symptoms. If it was inflamed, if it was sore, if the skin around it was a bit red, or if the person felt that it looked a bit ugly, or if it was kind of not settling down, I'd probably give it a little bit of time. They've had surgery in January. I mean, if it's ongoing since then, it's unlikely to be anything like an infection or anything like that. But if it's persisting, probably worth getting it checked, but it doesn't sound anything too scary.
Okay. Listener is wondering, do memory tablets work? The doctor prescribed them because I've brain fog, but will they do anything? I don't like taking things unnecessarily.
Okay. That's a good question. I suppose, do memory tablets work? I suppose the answer is yes, they do to some extent for some people, but they're not a game changer for everybody.
Right.
So we're very cautious about prescribing tablets that we think will boost memory or help with memory. There is a role for them. So I think if this person's GP or doctor has prescribed them, I probably would take them. Now, as regards them being for brain fog, I'm not so sure if that's that person kind of labelling what they have as brain fog or whether that's what they're prescribed for. But there are tablets for memory out there for certain conditions that do have some use.
So if you're prescribed it, advisable to take it?
Yeah, I think I would. If somebody's giving something for their memory, they're usually a little bit older, and we're very cautious about prescribing things for people, full stop, especially for somebody who's a little bit older. So any time I would prescribe something like that, I would only do it for someone who I felt needed it.
Listener is asking about help for restless legs. They get it very bad when they're sitting down for a long period, like the cinema.
This is something that we do see a lot in general practice. It's not something you see in the emergency department, obviously, but it is important.
When you say restless leg, because in my mind now I have something that comes to mind, but what is it like?
I suppose it's where you're sitting. I've never experienced it myself, but it's where you're sitting down and you have difficulty. Your legs maybe flicker or they kind of twitch, or it's kind of hard to settle. And I think, like, if you're sitting down at the cinema, theatre, maybe some people would say when they're sitting down in mass or whatever, that it would affect them. So you can take things for them. There's medication that you can take. And for us, again, like I said with the last question, we don't prescribe medicine unless we feel it's necessary. But a real thing for us is if something is affecting somebody's activities of daily living or doing something that they enjoy. So in a situation like this, if a patient came to me like that, I would probably prescribe something for them that they could take when needed.
And what would that typically be?
There's a few different tablets. So sometimes we'll, you know, advise people that they can take. There's a particular tablet called Chemadrin, which can often be very useful for this, but it can have a big side effect profile. Sometimes tonic water. Okay. And we do kind of advise people that they can try that as well.
Okay.
There's a bit of tonic with gin usually.
no gin.
No,
just
not
the tonic.
Just the tonic. Sorry to be boring. Yeah, but just the tonic. But there are solutions out there for that person. So I would, if it was annoying them doing something that they enjoy.
But it must be when they're getting in touch, you know, it must be on their mind. Dexter's wondering about anything you can take to avoid arthritis getting worse.
Okay. So there are two main types of arthritis. So there's the wear and tear one. Every single one of us will get if we live long enough. And then there's the type where the body kind of attacks itself, which comes in at a younger age. So assuming this is the wear and tear type, there's no real tablet you can take to reverse that. But staying physically active and taking something for pain when it arises again is important. So even starting out with something like taking paracetamol regularly will often alleviate pain enough that it'll allow people to get back up on their feet and doing things again.
Okay. This listener now is an interesting one. Routes for celiac diagnosis or support. They're 29. Could medication for arthritis be masking symptoms for celiac? What are the merits on the autoimmune protocol diet? Lots of contradictory information online.
Yeah, so Celiac diagnosis, there are two ways really. So often in general practice, we'll do a blood test. It's very straightforward. We usually get the result back in a few days. It's very important if somebody's going for that, that they don't exclude gluten from their diet in the lead up to that, because that can give a false negative. Okay, so what happens with someone who has celiac disease is they eat food containing gluten that irritates the bowel, and then they get symptoms like diarrhea, or if they're very young, they kind of don't grow effectively, or what we call failure to thrive. So for diagnosis, we can do a blood test, but the gold standard or the best is taking a little sample from the gut, which can be done on a gastroscopy, which is when we put it, not in general practice, but when we refer someone to get a camera into their stomach to have a look. So the main reason we would refer somebody for that would be, say, if we thought they had an ulcer, or again, if we wanted to confirm a diagnosis of celiac disease. So they put a camera in, take a little bit of sample, send that off to the laboratory, and then they look at it under the microscope. So they can give a pretty good kind of robust diagnosis or exclude it on the basis of that.
Okay. This texter has a reoccurring UTI. They're wondering if they can, how they can prevent it, because it's the fourth one this year.
Okay. That's pretty unfortunate.
Yeah.
So UTIs happen for a whole variety of reasons. I think it's important that if you're getting regular UTIs, or I suppose UTI stands for urinary tract infection, but in practice, most of them happen in the bladder. Okay. And things like making sure that you're very well hydrated, kind of spotting the kind of the symptoms that are associated with it quite early, and trying to kind of take fluids quite regularly in that time. You can get things over in the counter as well. There's a thing called Cystipurin, and if you like that, which is kind of a cranberry based kind of a tablet that people can take. Drinking cranberry juice also helps. I just would advise people just to be careful, because there can be a lot of sugar in cranberry juice, so just to kind of be cautious of that. Four in a year is quite a few. I think that would be somebody that I would consider. Like if that was my own patient, I would probably would be sending them to a specialist to consider just having a look into the bladder, just to see, is there something there that's making this person getting regular infections?
Okay, so look for maybe a referral if they're, at this
stage.
Yeah,
potentially, yeah.
Okay, listener has burning and tingling sensation in the soles of their feet, Niall. What can it be?
Yeah, okay, so this again is something that we see occasionally, and there are a few kind of associations with this in general practice that we want to outrule pretty much immediately. So we see it in diabetic patients. We also see it in patients who have a low vitamin B12. So again, those are two things that we can test for in general practice really, really easily. And if somebody has a low vitamin B12, or if they have, if they are diabetic and they didn't realize it, or they're diabetic and they're suboptimally controlled, then sometimes correcting that can improve things. If either of those kind of conditions don't come back, we might look a little bit deeper, or we may end up referring somebody for more tests. Not always, though, because when we make a diagnosis, that's, to me, sounds like a condition called peripheral neuropathy. And the fact that it's affecting both feet would imply to me that it's kind of something systemic. If it was kind of one side, that would be a little bit different. But if it's affecting both feet, it's probably something systemic. Okay. So, and if none of those conditions do show up in blood testing, we can prescribe medicine that can alleviate someone's symptoms.
Just a similar, but probably dissimilar message, looking for advice on numb and cold fingers and toes in the summer.
That sounds something that could be associated with Raynaud's, or
yes,
one of those conditions. And that's something, again, you can take medication for depending on the severity.
Okay.
So I suppose it's the theme of the day, really, but we don't like prescribing stuff for people unless it's essential. But I'll often have people who come into me and, like, it's kind of life changing, because they won't do certain things, or they can't do certain things, or they won't go certain places. So in a situation like that, I would have a lower threshold to prescribe a medication to try and alleviate their symptoms.
This texter says their daughter-in-law is 5 months pregnant and suffering with a lot of constipation. She's tried prune juice, etc. But what else can she do? Can she take anything over the counter?
You probably could take a gentle enough laxative. So that would kind of help getting the bowels moving. Definitely staying hydrated and continuing with the prune juice are things that we would recommend. Okay. Sometimes caffeine can get the bowels moving again. Again, not in big amounts if you're pregnant, to be cautious with that. But their laxatives all work in different ways. So if she goes into the pharmacy, or she talks to her GP or her kind of obstetrician at the next visit, they can advise something. Again, we're very careful about medication in pregnancy, but at times if there's a benefit to mum from taking something and there's no proven like harm that could exist for the fetus and it's for a very short term, then it's okay to do it usually.
Listener has a 10-year-old with a persistent cough. It's been investigated for asthma, has had a cough for several weeks. Any advice in the meantime?
Well, if it's been investigated for asthma, it'd be interesting to know what the outcome of that was. If the person is asthmatic, then it usually kicks in then that there's a sort of a stepwise or a ladder of treatment, which is very well worn and that we're very well used to and works and is extremely effective. If they're not asthmatic on the basis of that, sometimes we'll see children who will get a viral infection or a chest infection and they will cough and cough and cough for weeks and weeks later. We can generally live with that as clinicians, provided that the cough is diminishing over time. If it's increasing or plateauing or staying steady, that often warrants another look. But when I have a child who comes into me, especially a slightly older child with a chest infection or something along those lines, I'll always tell parents that the last symptom to go really in general practice in the cohort that we see will often be the cough. So again, I can live with it once it's diminishing.
Listener bruised their shin while playing Ga on Thursday. How long should it take to heal? Sounds like somebody who wants to play at the weekend.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. It depends really. Like the bruise, I wouldn't be so worried about provided they don't have much pain or discomfort. It'll probably take a few weeks to heal because obviously the shin bone, there isn't much muscle or tissue or fat over it. So it can be quite painful actually getting a bruise on the shin. But it could take a few weeks for that to clear up. If it's painful, it could take a little bit longer.
Finally, I have a cut in the corner of my lip, says this texter, that won't heal. I've put Sudocream on it. It's so sore. Feels like my glands on that side of my neck are swollen because of it now. So what else should I try?
Yeah, again, this is something that we see fairly regularly. And if you're putting Sudocream or something on it and it's not really working, then I probably would go into the chemist and get a very mild steroid. And a mild steroid will often dampen it down enough that it will settle down. The only thing that would kind of have me just kind of put my antennae up a little bit is the swollen glands in the neck. We can all get those intermittently. So I would, if they weren't settling down or that cut wasn't healing up, it is probably something that does need to be looked at. But I would try the topical steroid first.
Okay. If we didn't get to your question, we'll hang on to it for next Monday afternoon, or you can drop me an email, lunchtimelive@newstalk.com. Dr. Niall Breen from the Port Marnock GP Clinic. Thanks a million, Niall, for joining us here on the show.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday.
Brought to you by Active Iron
on Newstalk.